All right. It's the end of March. Roller Out the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast. Later on this week, it's baseball time. Modern day professional baseball starting back up. Spring is here. Spring has sprung, except for the 4 inches of snow I got on Friday. But it's gone now because it was 50-something today. And now I can really start thinking about baseball. And let me tell you something, vintage baseball community that exists coast to coast and border along this great country. The guest I have for you today is the kind of guest that is why this podcast exists. The baseball knowledge that we are about to talk about on many different subjects and many different levels. A man who has forgotten more about baseball than I'll ever know. Roger Ratzenberger. Roger, how are you doing?
Very good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. Listen, when everybody hears the last name Ratzenberger, I'm just going to get out of the way and then we're not going to talk about it. We are not going to talk about it. You've been asked millions of questions over the course of your life about this. You found it out. You did your genealogy. You know what I'm about to say.
And the answer is yes.
Yes, he is. The gentleman that plays
John
Cliff Clavin on Cheers, John Ratzenberger, you guys are cousins. This is my only question. We're going to move on from it. If you want to talk to Roger about Cliff Clavin, you contact him and you do it. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to talk to you about his cousin, John. Did you know he was your cousin before you looked into your genealogy?
Yes, I did. I've known that for my whole life, that he's my cousin.
Does he know that you're his cousin?
Yes. In fact, we just met over Christmas holiday for a lunch down here in Milford.
And does he like baseball?
He does, but he's nowhere near the fanatic that myself and folks like yourself are.
Well, then there's no reason to talk about him anymore. Okay, Roger. I was doing research about you. I've seen you in many different uniforms. You're currently part of the Knickerbocker Experience. Is that right?
I am with the Knickerbocker Experience. However, I am a retired player at this point, although I am hoping to get a couple of at-bats with the team this year.
Yes, I've met a lot of people who say they're retired, and yet I still see them up getting at-bats. So that's not retired. I saw Tom Fasolowicz at the Rocky Point Festival last year. Say he's told me multiple times he's retired, I believe. And then he came up to plate, and he hit a screaming line drive down the third baseline, of which he got a single. And then went and sat down. So is that retirement? I say no. I say you'll never retire, Roger.
But that also sounds like me. It's like my vintage nickname is Molasses, and it's one that I earned for my blazing speed. So I would be the same one who would, if I make it the first, you know, I'll be lucky.
Before I ask you to go way back and tell us how you got into vintage and how you got into baseball and your earliest memories, I am interested in the clubs that you have been a member of since you've gotten into vintage.
Really, there's two that I've been engaged with. The first one was the Alert Fire Hose Company, which was part of the Coltsville Vintage Baseball League up in Hartford, Connecticut. So I played with them for 3 years. And subsequent to that, now I've gotten at least engaged with the Knickerbocker Club.
So you didn't
I started late.
Go ahead. You didn't find vintage baseball until much later in life. Is that safe to say?
No, absolutely. I've always been a fan of baseball and baseball history. I've been to 44 different major league stadiums. So you know, my wife and I and family have gone around the different stadiums all over. And when we've done that, we look for all the historical sites, you know, related to baseball. So where old stadiums were, where, you know, where the Black Sox, you know, met, all those type of different of things. And I had heard about vintage baseball and a team called the Bridgeport Orators, named after James O'Rourke. And that's what first intrigued me, and I wanted to go down and see a game. So I went down, actually, to three different attempts to see a game. And each time I was there, there was no game. You know, it was a team that, I guess, was struggling having scheduling other teams to play. So I really didn't know much about that until my wife saw something in the paper about starting this Coltsville Vintage Baseball League up in Hartford. And my oldest son and I went up to watch a game and watched the game. And next thing you know, said, hey, this looks like fun. I was thinking of joining an over 50 softball team. And I said, you know, this looks like more fun. So my oldest son and I joined, and we played that year, and my younger son joined us the following year. So it was a lot of fun, and I missed playing. But I still like to go and watch.
Did you ever put any consideration into umpiring?
I have thought about that. I've been asked a couple of times. To be honest, I more enjoy watching the games. I'm always there with my camera taking pictures. So that's what I really enjoy doing. And I think I enjoy that more than umpiring.
So you came into it a lot later. Oh my God, you brought up how you traveled around to 44 different major league parks. So we're going to have to talk about that a lot. But I'm in the middle of doing the same thing. I've just started within the last couple of years of traveling around. And I have to turn these trips to stadiums across the country, I have to turn them into vacations. So my wife, she's not a big baseball fan, so to speak. She's baseball tolerant, I like to say. But making trips just to go watch baseball is not a thing I can do. So we gotta work the baseball around a bigger vacation kind of thing, so we can both get enjoyment out of it. But let's go back to your earliest. Let me just add
one thing. I'm very fortunate. My wife is a huge baseball fan, and actually, when we first met, she had been to more games than I had. So for me, it was really easy.
I want to say I'm jealous, but I believe I would get in trouble for that. So
yeah, probably.
Let's just say we all have different experiences. Okay. Roger, let's go back. You're a huge baseball nut. So I want to go back to the very beginning, your first memories of baseball and how it impacted you and where it took you.
My first memory of playing was when I started to play as maybe 6 or 7 years old. And my grandfather made this thing in the backyard where he tied a cable between two trees, put a ring around tied to a rope and had a ball and put it through a ball. So it was my own little batting machine there. You know, would swing it around and hit off of that. So that's one of my first memories of you know, playing baseball. It's kind of cool. But my first game I went to, I have to admit, was a Yankee game. Around 1967, and I was a Yankee fan for about 2 months till I went to my second game, which was a New York Mets game, and then that was it, and I've been a Met fan ever since.
Going back to when you were a kid, you had your own personal setup in your backyard there, but when you were playing in your neighborhood, when you were getting kids together, mm-hmm. you were not getting 17 kids together. You scraped up what you could. No. I am interested in your field situation. What was your field like? And what were some of the rules that you had to adapt to fit the number of people you played with?
That's pretty interesting, because we played a couple of different places. We had a field that we'd go out to and play, which was a little league field. But we couldn't usually get on that field, so we'd actually play in the street. And, you know, manhole cover was home plate. And we would basically, depending on how many players we had, would, you know, have a dead field and then use ghost runners as necessary. And we'd have actually a couple of our fathers would come out occasionally and play with us in the street until, you know, someone hit a ball, it hit a house or something like that. Then they scattered quicker than we scattered. Our parents did. So that was kind of fun.
Now, when you're growing up with these kids in the neighborhood and stuff, did you enter organized baseball at all?
I didn't when I was younger. Actually, I didn't until I was a teenager. When I was young, I had asthma as a child, so because of that, I really couldn't participate in a lot of the sports at that point. So it wasn't until I got into my teens that I started playing.
So that's so is that past Little League? Are we talking high school ball?
I never played in school. I played in recreational.
Okay. And did you have any aspirations about baseball, or was it just more or less a recreational activity for you?
Like Doc Adams, it was a recreational and an exercise for me. I really enjoyed playing. I loved watching the game. I loved playing the game, and realized that I didn't have the talents to make it the higher levels. So that was never something that I had to worry about.
So did you put all of your baseball aggression into being a Mets fan from an early age until this very day? Is that how long it's lasted?
Yeah, hard to say, but yeah, that is true. And both my sons still don't forgive me. They say it's child abuse because, all these years and they still haven't seen a championship because my oldest was born in November of 1986. So he just missed it.
That's bad timing right there. I was going to ask you, I'm going to litter you with some Mets questions here or there. I'm a rabid Tigers fan, so we have not crossed paths very often. The occasional player has gone one way or the other, I suppose, but I would like to know your highest moment as a Met fan and your lowest moment as a Met fan.
Well, the highest moment is probably surprising. Well, actually, it's pretty easy, I think. And that's both my sons and I were at Citi Field when Santana threw the first no-hitter in Mets history. So, after, 8,000-some-odd games to finally see a no-hitter, that was pretty special. I mean, World Series, I loved 86. I loved 69. But that no-hitter being there in person was pretty special. The lowest point was probably the Yadier Molina home run to knock the Mets out. I was there for that too. So, you went from Andy Chavez making the great catch, and you think there's no way they can lose now, and being all excited, and then boom, and it's like I've never heard the stadium as quiet as it was after that home run was hit. So. Yadier, Bleepin' Molina, and Adam Wainwright.
So
cold third strike on Beltran.
Yes, you can tell it's a very detailed memory, and that's how you can tell it's the worst one.
You're absolutely right.
About it. I'm going to tell you my two Met memories. They're not Tiger-related. But as a baseball fan, I watch plenty of baseball, so I have a couple of memories I have come across, and maybe I can get you to comment on those. But the two things that stick out in my head is one of the biggest Met memories, and that's Mike Piazza throwing the bat back at Roger Clemens. I was watching that game, and that has stuck with me ever since. And it's a true crime story of, was he just frustrated in throwing the bat, or was he actually kind of throwing it at Roger Clemens? And you'll never know. And the other one
It was the other way around.
That's right.
Clemens throwing the bat at Piazza.
It was, Yes, he broke the bat, and the bat got
a little roid rage.
Yes, I'm sorry, I mixed it up. See, I'm not a big Mets fan, but I yes, I
oh, because as a Mets fan, that one is very heartbreaking because it's like they just let it go and they didn't do anything about it.
Do you think Clemens was throwing the bat at Piazza, or was he just frustrated and throwing it?
I don't know, to be honest. But if you looked at him, the way he fired it, I think he fired it out of anger, and maybe it just happened to be that Piazza happened to be there where he was throwing it. But in any event, they should have responded.
Yeah, that was a situation that doesn't come up very often. They probably were just not sure what they should do. It's an unusual circumstance. The other Met memory I have was very heartbreaking to watch as a fan. It was, I believe the player's name was Wilmer Flores. And he was playing, and there was speculation going on that he was in the midst of being traded, even though he was still in the game, because he hadn't actually been traded. So there was no reason to take him out of the game. And he was crying because he had to sit there and think about how he was getting traded off the team he didn't want to be traded off of. And that was one of the saddest baseball things I've ever seen, and that has stuck with me ever since. You probably have a lot more info on that. What are the details you know about that?
Well, the good thing is that they were talking about trading him. And I guess on the radio, they had been guessing what was going on. And it filtered back to him, and the fans were starting to applaud him. And then when he heard what was going on, that's why he started crying. But the funny part about that was it's like that turned him into a cult hero with Met fans. It's like, here's somebody who wanted so bad to stay with the team that he's crying when he thinks he's being traded. And then I think it was the next night he hits a game-winning home run to win the game, you know, to win the game in the middle of a pennant race. So it's like it was just a story. It would be a great movie.
He's still in the league somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he was in San Francisco. I'm not positive, but he was still playing last year.
Yeah, it's funny how I've watched so much baseball and how little the Mets have meant to me. I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just, I'm sure the Detroit Tigers do not mean much to you.
Well, you know, there are some players from their team, and actually you talk about the crossovers like Howard Johnson. So there are some, you know, and Sparky Anderson and some of those that just, you know, cross team boundaries.
Howard Johnson, much better as a Met. You really got him in his prime. He wasn't much before he left. And as a Tiger fan, we were like, what's going on? He's doing what? And how is that possible? Yeah, he never really looked that good in Detroit. So you guys made out on that deal.
Well, usually it's the other way around. We trade them and they become stars.
Yeah, you've picked up some pitchers from us that didn't really work out for you so much, and because of injury and oldness. The Tigers thing is we pick up old relievers. That's what we do. I'm sure we've picked up many Met old relievers over the years. Roger, tell us, we're all familiar, everybody listening to this is very familiar with the Doc Adams situation. He's not in the Hall of Fame. That's been trying to go on for years and years and years. How did you get personally involved? How did you find out about this? And what is your involvement in that?
Okay. I first, when I got involved with playing vintage ball, that's when I first really got to know more about Doc Adams and, you know, the role that he played. And it was probably the middle of the first season playing, Popso Maxfield, who ran the league, came over to me one day and said, I got someone here that you'd like to meet. You really want to meet this person. And I'm thinking like, okay, interesting. Who is it? And the person he introduced me to was Marjorie Adams. And it's like the two of us had a lot in common, and we kind of hit it off right away. And so there was what I knew about him and knew about history and my being interested in history. And then hooking up with her and hearing all the stuff from her, it was a natural. So that's how I really got into it. And then I guess, geez, it's been probably around like 2011. And then it's been at least 10 years since set up the website. And the real idea was to kind of get Doc awareness of Doc Adams out into the public in general. You know, the Hall of Fame is going to do what the Hall of Fame is going to do, you know, but want to make sure that Doc is acknowledged and remembered for what he's done, not, you know, Abner Doubleday or you know, some of the stuff that, well, I don't want to go into that, but anyway,
that was the whole idea. We're going to get into it, Roger. Because the next question is going to be, why is Doc Adams, in your opinion, not in the Hall of Fame?
Now that's a really tough question. You know, a lot of people have different opinions on that. You know, everything from to the fact that, you know, the three of the key things that he's responsible for, right? The 90 foot base paths, 9 innings, and the 9 players that he was with, you know, show up on Alexander Cartwright's plaque, and it kind of makes it a little awkward for the Hall to have to be able to explain that. You know, and I think that, you know, with some of the voting, when they looked at it in the past, they, at least the one time he was on the ballot, there was, well, geez, we only have his word, right? And it all goes back to the Sporting News interview where he, you know, told the whole history. And, you know, of course, people like John Thorne have gone and done a lot of research and proven, you know, found a lot of the information, but there still wasn't, quote, a smoking gun. And that smoking gun, I think, was the finding of the laws of baseball, which came out, or which was rediscovered in 2016. And about 6 months late, had it been 6 months earlier, I think it's more than likely he would have been elected in December of 2015 and inducted in 2016. You know, why he didn't get on the ballot last time, 3 years ago, I wouldn't even hazard a guess. But I think what you need is more people who look at, more historians involved who really understand what's going on. You know, I remember Bert Blylevin talking to him, and, you know, his thing I had seen that he had was quoted as saying, well, I did, you know, we did a lot of research on each player, you know, and, you know, looked them up in Wikipedia. And it's like, that's not how you kind of really research, you know, who the players are and who deserves to be and who doesn't. And I admit he's on the ballot this year, and I'm even more concerned because with a change of the rules. You know, you have fewer people are going to be on the ballot. The ballot now covers pre-1980, so it's, you know, over 100 years. And you can only vote for, I think it's 3 instead of 4 players. So it's getting even more difficult for him to get in. And I think the thing that was sad was last time on the voting committee, who was voting, once the ballot was established, those who voted on the players, John Thorne was actually on that, in that committee, but Doc never made it to the ballot for him to be able to vote for, or, you know, to tell people about.
Let's pretend to get a phone call tonight from Major League Baseball, and they say, Roger, we've decided we're going to put Doc Adams in the Hall of Fame, but in order to do that, you have to take somebody out, and you're the man that has to take him out. Roger, who are you taking out of the Hall of Fame?
Wow. Well, first of all, the one thing I don't believe in is I don't believe that you take people out. I mean, once they're in, they're in. I really, even though mistakes are made, not geez, who would I take out?
I agree with that statement that you just said. Absolutely. Once you're in, you're in. Even OJ Simpson.
That's why the whole
thing. Even OJ Simpson, Roger.
Yep. I mean, he's in, and you know, you can't change history, right? I mean, that's the whole basis of this. It's like, you know, it's like tearing down statues or whatever else. You can't change history. Someone was voted in, they're in.
Well, I was just curious if over the years, because not only do you involve yourself in the Doc Adams situation, but of course, as a baseball fan, every year the steroid era player thing comes up, and who would you put in and who wouldn't you, and who said this and everything. And I just thought there might be some players, because the talk is always who should be in, but I don't hear a lot of talk of who shouldn't be in.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, as an example, I mean, and I'll go out on a limb, Harold Baines, really nice guy, good player, but it's like, I don't think he should have gotten into the Hall. I don't think he stood out enough to get in. Would I take him out? No, I wouldn't, you know, but I think what happens is a lot of times is you get people who get in because their friends are on the committees or whatever. And for me, for someone to get into the Hall, it's like they really should be dominant for their era. I mean, it should be a no-brainer. So I have kind of higher standards anyway. I don't think there should be borderline players. Either you're in or you're not, and it should be obvious to most people.
So even if Harold Baines plays his whole career as an average first baseman, doesn't play designated hitter, plays first base, is just average, he's not bad, he's not good, you still feel the same way about Harold Baines?
Now you have to respect, if you're talking about the designated hitter, I think you have to respect it for what it is, right? It's part of the game. I was a traditionalist. I don't like the designated hitter. I hate the fact that it came into the National League. But if it's going to be part of the rules, you gotta respect it for what it is. I just don't think that I can't think of any way I would pick him, you know, as one of the top players.
I think of the designated hitter as a guy. I would always, if I were a major league manager, I would use the designated hitter as a day off for the star players at the premium positions, because everybody wants to hit. So it's not like they don't want a day off from hitting. They want a day off from fielding. So to have a specialized designator, I'm not a big fan of that. But if it was, you know, give like Miguel Cabrera, once you transition from being able to play first base and you become designated hitter because you can't handle baseball anymore, maybe Miguel Cabrera should have left a season or two before he did, because it was painful to watch. But I don't know. It's still baseball. You've seen 44 stadiums. Name the stadium that you never got a chance to go see, and you will never have a chance to go see.
There's a couple of them, but probably a couple of the ones that Tiger Stadium is one that I really wish I had been able to see. Didn't see that one. You know, the Polo Grounds, just age-wise, I wasn't lined up for, so that wasn't possible. I mean, that's probably the one of the I probably missed the, you know, Tiger Stadium, just because of the history of it, and not just because you're a Tiger fan.
Oh no, historic stadium had its pros and cons. I think the difference between, say, the Tigers and Tiger Stadium and, say, the Red Sox and Fenway Park is, I would say a lot of fans at the time were like, yeah, it's probably time for a new stadium. And you don't hear that out of Red Sox fans. You wouldn't hear that out of Cubs fans. You know, well, the Mets have a new ballpark, a newer ballpark. Were they upset about it? Were you upset about it?
depends if you're a real Met fan or not. Shea Stadium was a dump, but it was our dump. And there's nothing like sitting in that stadium, you know, like in a pennant race, sitting in like the mezzanine level and feeling the stadium shake. I mean, literally. And the problem with Citi Field, it's taken a while to get used to it, feel like your own stadium, because it really felt more like the Dodgers when you first moved in. You didn't have a Mets Hall of Fame. You know, they really didn't, you know, they've started to now with new owners.
We're having a hard time with the audio.
Starting to really embrace.
There we go.
I mean, even when you walk in, have you been to Citi Field? Okay. Have you been to Citi Field?
No. It was on my list when I visited New York a couple of years ago, and I did not get to it. I worked my way down the East Coast because I went to the Doc Adams Festival in at Old Bethpage, and we did Philadelphia, Baltimore, the Washington National Stadium, and it was just too much baseball to fit in, so I had to take one out, and it was Citi Field because I knew I wasn't going to a Yankees game, so I knew I had to go back to New York anyway to go to a Yankees game eventually, so Citi Field unfortunately didn't make the cut, but I very much look forward to going there. It looks wonderful on the television.
I mean, it's a beautiful stadium. If you're a Met fan, you walk in into the main rotunda and it's Jackie Robinson and the Dodgers. It's like, which you don't get the feeling, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Jackie Robinson, but it doesn't give you the feeling of, you know, this is the Mets home.
Oh, okay. Do they must still have the apple popping out of the hat somewhere. That's got to be a thing, right?
Yes, they do.
Is it the same one?
Yeah, the original one is now out in front of the stadium, so they have it there on display, and they have a new one that's out in the outfield. A new and improved.
So give us your overall grade of Citi Field. It's obviously failing in historical aspects, but as a modern-day baseball stadium, how's it doing?
As a modern-day stadium, it's really a beautiful stadium. They really did a nice job from that perspective. '09, and it's feeling more like home now, but it took a while to get there.
I know from reading an interview that you did with someone that your favorite ballpark is Camden Yards. Is that information I have correct?
That information is correct, although it does change a little bit. It depends on, there's two stadiums, and it depends on which one I've gone to most recently. It flips between Camden Yards and PNC in Pittsburgh. Because both those stadiums, it's like just the way they fit into the city. And, you know, I think Camden Yards, the thing about that is it was the first of the new generation. And, I mean, it just, they did everything right with that stadium. And PNC, if you're sitting in the right spot, it's, you know, especially getting towards dusk, looking out, seeing the sun coming down into the city of Pittsburgh. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful views that there is watching, you know, there. So, but yes, today Camden Yards is still my favorite.
PNC is an answer I hear a lot about favorite stadiums, and I haven't seen that one yet. Baltimore, I was in Baltimore, and it was a rainout. But the rain wasn't supposed to start until just after game time, right? So I'm like, well, you know, I'm just going to get in. My wife and my daughter stayed back at the hotel. So I walked, because we were close. We were really close to the stadium. So I walked to the game, and I'm like, I just got to get in the gate. They just got to play a couple innings, and I'm going to call this one good. And when they let me in, I'm going to walk around and see everything, and we'll be able to knock this off the list as far as I was concerned. And they never opened the gate. They came to the gates And the downpour started, and it was a downpour. And thank God it was warm out. And they stood there with their raincoats at the gate waiting for the word to open the gates to let us people in, and it never came. So,
oh no.
So that one still, I have to go back for that one as well. But so right now my favorite is Cincinnati's Great American Ballpark.
That's a nice one.
To watch a baseball game, I have different categories, but to actually sit down and watch a baseball game, that would be my best one so far that I have. It's beautiful inside and out. The museum is amazing, and it's right there. I really like what they've done with the place. The more I see other stadiums, the more I realize Comerica is kind of like middle of the road. I used to think it would be like top fiver in baseball. It's really not, but it's it's fine, but it's nothing special. And they haven't done anything outside. And that's the disappointment when I go around to these great places, is really the outside is, I mean, it's nice, and they're really building Detroit out nicely from the middle. I mean, they have the Little Caesars Arena where the Pistons and the Red Wings play. That's all right next to it now, and it's right next to where the Lions play, Ford Field, and it's a nice area. You don't have to worry about the area as much as you did when Tiger Stadium was going, but but it doesn't feel very baseball-y. And when you're going to a Cincinnati Reds game, you get a couple blocks away and you know you're going to a baseball game. And I love that feeling. So
I love.
Go ahead.
Okay. I love the look of Comerica, though. And it's also the only stadium I ever went to that there was a fire alarm and we had to evacuate the stadium.
Oh.
It was on, Jack Brickhouse Day, right? Brickhouse? No.
Jack Brickhouse is a name I do not know.
Who was their longtime announcer?
Ernie Harwell?
Ernie Harwell, sorry. Brickhouse is Chicago. it was Ernie Harwell Day, and there was a fire alarm. We had to evacuate this. And then they let everybody go back in, which was kind of neat. You know, so kind of surprised about that.
Was this after Ernie had passed, or was that the day that Ernie gave his speech?
He was still there because I've got the program from it. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it was I forgot what year it was now, but yeah, no, he was still alive. So it was a speech.
Did you go to that game specifically because it was Ernie Harwell Day?
It just happened to luck out, you know, with all the games going. Every once in a while, you luck out. You know, that was doing. I think we were. I forget which stadiums we did on that trip. There were a bunch. We were just like kind of driving around, and we just happened to hit that one right.
Last year, I did make it to Fenway Park for the first time. How old were you when you walked into Fenway Park for the first time?
Probably 25, I think.
Oh,
because okay. I was working at my first job, and my boss had extra tickets and said, "You want to go up to a game in Fenway?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" And we sat up on the roof, and that's back in the day when literally it meant sitting on the roof. On the roof, they had these folding chairs, and that's where we were sitting.
Wow. Folding chairs. That's amazing.
That was the first time.
Have you gone back sporadically over the years to watch the Mets in interleague play?
Yeah. Actually, I've seen the Mets play there, but I've also gone there quite a bit because my youngest son went to a school at Northeastern and lived in Boston for about 10 years. So it was great. It's like at least a couple times a year, go up there, you know, hit the bleacher bar and who's on first and all those bars around and then go in and watch the game was great.
Yeah,
so that's one thing I missed because now he's moved back.
I walked in.
Now he's moved back, so I don't get up to Boston as much.
Oh, It's not that far, though, is it? How far is the trip from New York to Boston?
Oh, no, it's about 2.5 hour drive.
We fell in love with Boston when we went last year. So I went and saw the Tigers play the Red Sox, and I cried like a baby. My wife probably accuses me of not having very much emotion. And then I walk into a baseball stadium and I just got tears coming down my eyes and multiple times. And it was an incredible experience. And I got to sit next to some of the most Boston fans with the accent and everything next to me. I'm like, I couldn't have paid better people to come and sit next to me during this game. And I had a great time. So we've actually made the promise that we're going back every year to watch the Tigers play the Red Sox, because they only do it once now because of the way the scheduling works. So end of May, I'm going to a Thursday and Friday night game. And I'm excited about that. I also get to go to Seattle and San Francisco this year for Tiger games. Can you tell me anything about you? Have you been to both of those stadiums?
Yes.
Can you?
Yeah, the only stadium I haven't been to is the new one in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Give me some advice.
The one
then.
That they opened it. I'm trying to remember now. With I don't even know what they're calling it, Pac Bell or whatever, what they're calling it right now. But if I recall correctly, it's if you sit on the right field side, one level up, it's like you get a great view of the bay, Alcatraz. It's a really cool look from out there. But it's the right field side. Like I said, I think it's one level up. But I'd say it's been, God, at least 10 or 12 years since I've been there. So I'm sure they've changed a lot because they're constantly making changes. Seattle, I wasn't a big fan of Seattle just because with the retractable dome and stuff. That's one of the fields we did take the tour, and got down on the field and all that. But I don't know, not one of my favorites.
They got to have a roof, Roger. It rains so much there.
Fine. They don't. Hey, look, they don't have one in Minnesota, right?
That's true.
The football team does, but the baseball team doesn't.
Yeah.
So what's your least favorite stadium?
Oh God, let me look at my board. Oh well, that's easy. The Washington Nationals. I was at the Texas Rangers. Original ballpark. And, but I was there when I was young. I was probably in my very early 20s. So at the time, that was probably a pretty good ballpark. But I have a feeling if I were able to go back with my memories and details, that was probably not the greatest of ballparks. But when I went to the Washington Nationals game, I was not comfortable. I thought I'm not enjoying this experience. As soon as I walked in, because you walk in at kind of higher level, you're not ground level with the field when you walk in from left field. They have the store there, and they had a band playing, which is cool. And they had, but that seems to be where everything was, and it was just a mass of people in one area. And I'm like, what is going on here? Why is there so many people here? The Nationals were awful. There wasn't very much attendance, even though the weather was fine. I'm like, why are there so many people here? And then I realized as I walked around and stuff, it just, that's the layout. The layout was to have a big cluster of people in one area. And I'm like, I don't like that. And then I sat in my seats, which were fine, but it didn't feel like I felt in a lot of other stadiums. It didn't feel very homey, very baseball-y. I didn't enjoy my experience. And I thought the green W in center field that's probably covered with like an AstroTurf kind of thing. I thought it was the ugliest thing I'd ever seen in baseball. And that added to it. I hated it. My favorite part there was I walked in immediately and got to take a selfie with the Teddy Roosevelt mascot character, and I was able to go and get some sweet throwback stuff out of the store. But other than that, no, they're far in last place right now. And now I'm scared to go to Seattle because of what you said, but,
Seattle's not bad. It's definitely not bad.
Give me some of your worst ones.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind, which is the worst. And that's Tampa Bay. It's like Tampa Bay is the absolute worst in existence.
And
the only thing.
Yeah. They know it.
The only one worse. The only one worse than that was when I went to Olympic Stadium when they were still playing in Montreal.
Oh.
That was worse.
You know, the people in Tampa Bay know that they have a terrible stadium, and they try to do stuff about it. And I think they're on the right path to do something about it. But it just seems like you could have done something faster. But yeah, I have a feeling if I don't get down there to a Rays game, I'm going to not see a terrible baseball situation because I've heard nothing but bad things about that. Now that we're down in Florida talking about stadiums, how did you feel about the Miami Marlins stadium? I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
You know, I didn't think it was bad at all. I thought it really, cause it fit into Miami, you know, it fit when they took out like the statue and stuff, I mean, that I think ruined it because it's like, okay, I know Derek Jeter didn't like the home run statue and all that, but that was part of the character of it. It fit in with the Miami environment, and so I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, I got to see the home run statue in action as I went before the Jeter takeover, and I got to see Rizzo when he was on the Cubs hit one out and send somebody's nachos up into the air. That was amazing. So yeah, really enjoyed it. For the one of my other categories, the overall experience of Miami was good. The baseball experience, not almost non-existent. But I still enjoyed myself and would have no problem going back. I really enjoyed the Bobblehead Hall of Fame. Did you see the Bobblehead Hall of Fame?
Yes.
I thought that was pretty cool.
That was cool.
What do you have on your docket for this year when it comes to vintage baseball and modern baseball?
Well, for vintage baseball, there's at least two. Doc Adams Old Time Baseball Festival in Old Bethpage. You know, that's every year, you know, get down there for that. Doc Adams Birthplace Classic, which is, should be returning this year up in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire. We'll be going up there for that. And then, so those are the two that, you know, when the calendar flips, mark those on the calendar right away. And then everything else goes along. I'd like to get down to Gettysburg. I just don't think I think that's in April. And I'm going to be heading up to Cooperstown for the Sabres 19th Century Committee meeting up there with Fred. So I don't think I'm going to be able to get to Gettysburg this year, but
you've probably been into the Hall of Fame quite a few times. Would that be correct?
I would say up until the pandemic, I averaged at least twice a year.
So what is the one thing? Just one. Do not cheat on this game, Roger. You're going to the Hall of Fame. What is the one thing that you know you're looking forward to the most and are going to spend time at, even though you spend time at it every time you go?
And I hate to admit this, but I will. It's to see the ball, and I believe they have a glove as well, that Neil Ball used to do the first unassisted triple play. And I guess it's debated now whether it was actually the first or there was not. But anyway, it's a long story that if you got a minute, I can get into it.
Absolutely.
Okay. my grandmother, who was 100% Italian, 61st cousins, knew nothing about baseball. And when I was young, she said, my grandfather used to shoot, trap, and skeet with this guy who used to play baseball. And he was a dandy. You know, he had the hat and the jacket and the whole thing, and he was really great. So he was the first one to do something in baseball. And I'm thinking, really, come on. Grandma doesn't know anything about baseball. She didn't really know, you know, so I kind of didn't even pay attention to it. And then when my wife and I went up for the first time to the Hall of Fame together, we're looking through this case here, and sure enough, here's the ball, and it says, Neil Ball, first unassisted triple play in the history of baseball. And my grandmother had passed at that point, and I'm like, oh my God, Grandma knew what she was talking about. And I wish I could have told her that I had seen it. So now every time we go, we have to find that and take a look for it.
Do things usually stay about the same at the Hall of Fame? Do they change things around a lot, or is it basically always the same?
Yeah, they do. They do rotate exhibits that they'll rotate through. And then even some of the things that used to be in a case in the middle, just with some other things. And then they had a special exhibit on firsts, and then they moved it to another area. So they do rotate things. So that's why it's always you're looking to hope you find it again, because they have, I think what they have on display is only like, you know, a tenth of the artifacts that they actually have.
Oh.
They have a lot down below.
Have you been to Vintage Baseball in Michigan at the Greenfield Village?
I have not yet, no.
Oh, well, you got to do that.
I know.
You got to put that in your calendar right now. August 2025.
Well, it's definitely, what do you call it? It's definitely on my bucket list. You know, I've got a list of all these things I want to do. The pandemic really messed things up, because it just kind of took, you know, a couple of years out of all the stuff, you know, I'd planned on doing. And then I had retired. So I said, oh, I got a great amount of time. And now I'm unretired. So I have less time again.
You retired? Yeah, you'd unretired? Appreciate this.
Yeah, well, an opportunity came along and I just couldn't pass up. A company that does pitching simulators. It's a video screen that shows a pitcher pitching and has a pitching machine behind it. It's about a mile from my house, and they needed some engineering help. So I came out of retirement.
So when do you retire?
I play every day.
When do you retire?
We'll see. Right now I'm having too much fun with it. So.
Well, sure. That doesn't sound like you're working.
Well, you know what they say. If you enjoy what you're doing, you never work a day in your life, right?
Right. So is that tell us about this pitching simulator, or will it simulate certain players, or is it just certain pitches?
No, what they have various videos for different age groups, but it's not a major league pitcher, but it's someone who's, you know, an adult looking pitcher, and got righty and lefty. And then you can throw everything from, I think, 6 to 8. Age level up to professional. So everything from like 30 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour, curveballs, sliders, slurves, all that stuff.
Knuckleball?
So it's pretty cool. No, there's no knuckleball.
Well, there isn't, but until it's, now, because now you're going to go see if a knuckleball can fit in there.
I'm going to say, what do we need to do that? No spin. Yeah, it's called ProBatter, ProBatter Sports.
And
they got me out of retirement.
That's what I want to do. I want to retire and then have somebody be like, but what about this baseball thing you could do? Like, okay.
Well, that's why, how could I say no? It's like, really?
Roger, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You really classed up the joint. I know people were really interested in whenever I have somebody who is knowledgeable and as well liked as you, I always feel the buzz before the episode. So you're one of those guys. I appreciate you. But before you go, I got to give you the old pepper. I don't even know if you know what this is. But every episode, I try to give people some quick questions and get quick answers just to get to know you better on a non-baseball level.
Okay.
So here we go, about 10 questions. Roger, what was your first car?
First car was a Galaxy 500. It was maroon.
What is your favorite beverage to have at a baseball game?
A beer.
Paper, rock, or scissors?
Scissors.
Where did you take your wife on your first date?
To the movies, we saw Flash Gordon.
Speaking of movies, name a baseball movie that people love that you just think is, it's okay.
Bad News Bears.
I would agree with you. That's what I have down here. What was the first concert you went to?
Chicago Transit Authority.
How big of a hole does it have to be in your socks before you throw them away?
Ooh. Pretty big. a nickel, size of a nickel.
Size of a nickel. What is your Mount Rushmore of New York Mets? Your personal, not your opinion on who the all-time Mets are. I want Roger's personal Mount Rushmore of New York Mets players.
Okay, well, Tom Seaver is the first one. There's no doubt about that. David Wright. And, Mike Piazza.
Name one of your pet peeves.
One of my pet peeves. When people use the wrong word, like saying, I'm going to have to flush out the details as opposed to flesh out the details.
Have you had a vintage baseball injury when you were playing?
No, surprisingly. Well, no, I take that back. I guess my hamstrings, the first time I played, were sore, but it wasn't really an injury. We're just sore for a day.
So you were able to get back out there the next weekend?
Yeah. So that's why I said it's not really an injury.
And finally, what's your favorite baseball smell?
Favorite baseball smell. Peanuts.
Peanuts is a good one, unless you have an allergy. I hope we didn't offend those people.
I know. I hope I didn't offend anybody with that, right?
Roger, great to have you. Thank you so much. You've been a joy.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I was thinking, wow, want to talk to me? And I really appreciate it. It was a fun experience. And just would like to leave you with one thing to all the folks out there. I know they know who Doc Adams is, but visit DocAdamsBaseball.org. We'll be putting updates out there all year and just looking for people to, spread the word about who he is, what he's done, and why he's important to the game.
I mean, he invented shortstop, Roger.
Isn't that enough? Right?
That's what I always say. Let's forget about all of the hearsay of everything else. Let's just say there's a man. He invented shortstop. Is he in the Hall of Fame? Come on.
All right. I'm with you.
All right.
I'm with you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can get our podcasts on the Podbean or just about anywhere where you hear podcasts. And then once in a while, we put up some videos, too. You can go to our YouTube page. We got some baseball games on there and other situations. This is going to be the very first podcast that's going to last exactly an hour, as I'm going to hit stop in 3, 2, 1.